It's something to be grateful for. Thank you all. Sometimes I think the main job of folks like me, preachers, I mean, is to say things that are well known, but that we forget. To say aloud truths we know to be true, things we know matter, are important, but we lose track. In our rush from the moment to moment, in our distraction about the news of the day, in our fear, in our greed, in our anger, in our hurt, we are not always our best selves. We forget what we know, and we don't practice what we wish to practice. And some folks who have my job noticing this failure emphasize the need to confess and return to covenant. There's a place for that. But the liturgy, the traditional liturgy, the order of worship, doesn't just include a prayer of confession. It also includes a prayer of thanksgiving, a time to be grateful and notice our blessings, to look around the room, comfortable in your elastic pants, and say thank you, to lift your eyes to the changing leaves and say thank you, to share bread and wine with a new friend and say thank you, to come through grief with the love of family and friends and say thank you, for small joys and large ones to say thank you. Our job is sometimes to tell folks things we already know but we forget, things we've known for ages but lose track of in these times, in all times. Part of reminding us of things we know is knowing that we are not the first people to face disconnection, despair, and petty wannabe tyrants. We are not the first. And we know what works in those times and what doesn't. I know that the best ministry I have ever received, sometimes from you yourselves, was to be reminded of things I knew but forgot in moments of challenge. So let me tell you three things that are true, that you already know are true, that the ancients have known are true, but that we forget at our peril. Three things I want you and me to remember this week and this month, this lifetime. Community is made around the table. The guest is holy. Gratitude conquers fear. Community is made around the table. I love Wright Thompson's essay about his family tradition. He understands how precious it is and how the act of cooking and eating and playing and being in the room together is what makes a family. It isn't biology or just a family tree. It isn't even about just relation. It's about being around the table together. Friends are the same way. It happens when you have a meal. Me, I long for a resurrection of a great tradition, the dinner party. I'm single-handedly trying to make this happen with my friends, and some of them get it. They say, yes, absolutely, we'd love to come. Others, I think, are perplexed. We face an epidemic of loneliness in this country. Study after study shows that we live in a deeply disconnected time when more than half of Americans have no one, or only one person, usually their spouse, in whom they can confide. Half have no one, or only their spouse. There was a recent article I saw about friendship for young adults. Why don't you have more friends was the headline. It was total clickbait. The answer was because you don't go out to dinner with people. You have to say yes and then show up. That was the article. Community is made around the table. There's a great joke going around that the real miracle isn't that Jesus turned water into wine or walked across the lake or healed the sick. No, the real miracle is that a man in his early 30s had 12 close friends. How'd they do that? They ate together. The Christian communion remembers a meal. I don't know if they had pumpkin pie. There was pumpkin there. They might have had pumpkin pie, but I'm sure they needed their elastic pants, right? The Last Supper, they're all lounging back, right? We're going to sit at the welcome table. We're going to sit at the welcome table. That's how we connect with each other. And it is the most holy, the most needed. It is good for our hearts and our souls and our being. The gray-haired New Englander sees round his board the old broken links of affection restored. Should it not be so? I know families are complicated and sometimes far away, and it's not simple, but it need not be people you are related to, a group of friends gathered around, even strangers who are just starting to get to know each other. This is how the world is made, how we overcome the isolation that keeps us apart and afraid and alone. This is how we live, with pie. The second truth is related to the first, that the guest is holy. If the common table is how we make the world, welcoming the guest to this table is an act of grace and love and faithfulness. Comfort me. Comfort me. Welcome me. All kinds of people around that table. We are the guest at that table, by the way, in that song, not the host. The guest. Gratitude moves us from considering ourselves as the benevolent host to seeing ourselves rightly as the guest of this universe, this planet, with others with whom we share the world. Like most of us, I'm sure I've been thinking a lot about how the suffering and resilience of the Jewish people have carried them through millennia. I think a lot this week about that. Comfort, comfort. We took up an offering for Hias this morning. Hias comes out of that commitment in the Jewish tradition to welcome the stranger and the refugee, the visitor, as we were strangers in Egypt, welcome the stranger in your land. Ruth, the daughter-in-law of Naomi, Ruth, the stranger, the Moabite, she says, "Your people will be my people." The rest of the story, in case you don't have the book of Ruth memorized, it's only 4 chapters, but nonetheless, the rest of the story is that she comes to Judea, she meets a distant relative of Naomi's, her mother-in-law's, a man named Boaz, and they share a meal together, bread dipped in wine. Boaz grows to love her, loves the way that Ruth is loyal to Naomi, and they are married, and they have a son. And that son has a son, and that son's name is David, who becomes king of the Jews. His grandmother came to Israel as an immigrant, as a refugee, chain migration, actually. It's always a both and. We are the guest and the host all at once. When we understand ourselves as interdependent, as all guests, then we must all also be hosts. For we have entertained angels unaware. No instruction of the Abrahamic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, no instruction is more clear than this: welcome the refugee to your land. They are desert people. Feed the stranger, host the traveler. No instruction is more clear or repeated more often. And that some people today, in our time, would claim to be Christians, but nakedly stoke fear against refugees to gin up votes sickens me. I say this without irony. The judgment of the Lord shall fall upon them. And those who spread racist lies about refugees, or those who contemplate killing them if they arrive, those who condemn desperate children to death, they are sinners. And they do evil, and history shall judge them harshly. History will judge us harshly too, if we do not do everything in our power to fight this evil and this hatred which invades our land. We must remind the people of the truths we too quickly forget. When fear and busyness and shame distracts us from who we were meant to be. You know what to do. The guest is holy. When we are the guest, we are holy. When we are the host, the guest is holy. Set out a plate and a chair for them. Come and eat. Come and eat. This is not complicated. We make it complicated, but it really isn't. This is both personal and social all at once. It is our calling and our task. We begin with gratitude. Out of our thanksgiving, we share. Out of our abundance, we welcome all kinds of people around that table. And that's the third thing, the thing we forget sometimes. Gratitude conquers fear. When we name what we are thankful for, when we go around that board where affection is restored and we say, I am thankful for, it reminds us that not all is bleak. It fixes before us what we have to bring to the table of community and the work of our lives. There's so many examples of this, how this really works to transform lives and communities. One example I like is asset-based community development. Have you heard of this? Asset-based community development, ABCD. It's a nice acronym. It says, okay, what do you have? Let's build on that. Your town has a river. Let's work with that. You have parks. Let's start there. Asset-based community development starts with an assessment of what you can do instead of always being about what you can't do. The same technique is effective with children. All of your teachers and folks who work with children know this. What are their strengths? What are their interests? How do we build on that in a way that helps them with things they're not as good at yet? Not by focusing on how they're wrong or disappointing, but saying, they're good at this. Let's start there. Organizational transformation, marriage therapy, fitness coaching, they all work on this principle. Start with where you are strong, what you're grateful for. Instead of getting stuck in what's wrong, start with what's right and grow it. Move away from fear and shame. Move toward love and hope. Move toward community. Gratitude moves us toward community. We have different gifts. Our cupboard might be bare, but we have stories, and others have food. They'll bring the feast. And we can be grateful for that, and we can share what we have instead of being worried about what we don't. Narcissists, you may notice, are never grateful for what others do or bring. They just can't say thank you very well without making it about them. Thank you for liking me. Maybe they can say. They always focus on what's wrong with other people instead of being grateful for what's best in them. Do you know anybody like that? It's gross, right? The sense of entitlement, of greed. Gratitude moves us to open-hearted care, to community. Gratitude is beautiful. You learn to notice what others do for you and how we are interwoven. The person who says thank you genuinely and with a full heart, that's the person we want to be, isn't it? When you see that person, you admire them. The good news is that this isn't that hard. You start by saying thank you. That's it. Instead of being afraid of what we don't have or don't know, we can find hope in what we do. Instead of closing the door and the heart to the guest, which is ourselves, we can see them and ourselves as holy. Instead of being alone, we can invite, we can join, raise our glasses, slice the pie, and make the world we seek. In the end, all these things, building community, welcoming guests, conquering fear, all these things that gratitude does for us when we practice it, all of these things are about ending our illusion of independence. They're about learning about how we are in it together. All kinds of people around that table. thanking each other for their loving hands and loving ways. Comfort me, dance with me, sing with me. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll lean on you. Wondrous love. When we are not alone, we are interconnected. And gratitude reminds us, it orients us toward beautiful, holy interdependence, not independence. I mean, you can eat a pumpkin pie by yourself. You can, but that's not what it's for, is it? Pie is meant to be shared, sliced, passed out, and enjoy it. It is meant to be shared. I mean, you can try to live a life all by yourself. You can, but it's not what it's for, is it? Life is meant to be shared, passed out, and enjoyed. That's what it's for. I am grateful this day for you, the gathered people of this church, for those I lean on and those who lean on me, who take turns. I hope you are grateful, as I am, for all who love you, your friends, your family near and far, for the guest unmet who awaits, and for this earth our home, this life our home. For music and laughter and resilience, for those who work for justice and long for a better world, for the mystery that moves in and between us, and for all that is good and decent, may you this day and every day give thanks for all that is worthy of praise and join together to build yet a world worthy of our love.